The Pepper and Dylan Podcast.
Well, hi there, and thank you very much for checking out this somewhat of a special podcast, not something we do regularly. My name is Rob Pepper from The Pepper and Dylan Show, and I invite you to listen to this 10-minute interview with Ice Cube. A big thank you to Dylan, who knows me well enough to know that this is somebody I have always admired. This is somebody I have always said that sometime, if I ever have an opportunity, I would love to talk to Ice Cube. From NWA, hip-hop legend and really entertainment legend. And Dylan worked hard to arrange this interview, and I'm proud to have had the opportunity, thrilled to have had the opportunity to not only talk to Ice Cube, but share it with you. For me, I don't know, Ice Cube just has a special place. Kind of, he's been a thread that is intertwined in my own life since that very first moment my cousin lent me Straight Outta Compton by NWA in like 1988. As many know, NWA was the world's most dangerous group for a time, and Ice Cube was one of the founding members, and he's credited with writing some of the most significant and influential hip-hop songs of the entire gangsta rap era. But don't call it gangsta rap to Ice Cube. To him, it was bigger than that. It meant more than that. It was reality rap. NWA was the West Coast sound before the West Coast had a sound. It was really just a window into a life that me, a 12-year-old white middle-class kid growing up in Alberta, didn't know existed, but couldn't turn away from it. As the story goes, Ice Cube left NWA after their massive star turn, not out of greed or envy, but out of necessity. While Eazy-E was the one in the limelight and Dr. Dre was making the music, Cube was the one with the pen and the pad, creating a genre, changing an industry. But he was also the one living in his childhood bedroom with his mom, stretching the $30,000 he got for making the triple platinum Straight Outta Compton. Stretching that money as far as he could go, looking for his next opportunity. He even dabbled in architecture school for a while, and then his solo ventures took off. He recreated his sound and style and his faith. And as the 90s invited hip-hop into the mainstream, he was given an opportunity to explore acting as well in a critically acclaimed role as Doughboy in John Singleton's Boys in the Hood. All these years later, what, 30, 35 years later? 14 albums, 40 films, 2 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductions, one for his solo career, one for NWA. Ice Cube has also been instrumental in building a fan base for professional 3-on-3 basketball over the last 7 years. His commitment in this league, not only to create something different from the norm, but to shatter barriers for women athletes. Just this week, he made news by attempting to land one of the game's brightest female stars, Caitlin Clark. He offered her a lucrative $5 million contract to compete against both men and women in the 7th season of his Big 3 Basketball League, which begins on June 15th. Now, he requested politely not to discuss the offer with Caitlin Clark, as we're in the middle of the Women's College Basketball Tournament, and he's doing as much as he can not to distract her with this opportunity of a lifetime. So we stayed away from that, which was just fine, because there was plenty to talk about aside from that. Oh, by the way, on top of running a basketball league and all of the accolades that he has already amassed, he's also touring Canada again. He was here not too long ago. He's coming back April 30th with the Straight Into Canada tour at the River Cree. Some tickets still available to that. You can get it through icecube.com. It is truly one of my biggest professional thrills to welcome you to 10 Minutes with Ice Cube. Enjoy.
The Pepper and Dylan Show Podcast.
The Pepper and Dylan Show Podcast.
Well, there he is. Yep. How's it going? How are you?
Good, man. Love that shirt.
Yeah, thank you. I wasn't sure if I should wear it or not, because I'll admit to you right now that I am, this is my moment. This is not about anything else. This is a moment for me from when I was 12 years old, man. Like, this is pretty awesome to be able to meet you and talk to you. So thank you for taking the time to do this.
Anytime.
You know, there are so many things that I want to talk to you about, right? And like, I'll start with just what it means to me. Like, moment my cousin gave me Straight Outta Compton, it was a cassette. It was a clear cassette. Yeah. In Canada, you had to buy them on import, and they were like $35. And yeah. I popped it in there, and then right away, that you're now about to witness, as soon as I heard that, and then you come on, and I was just like, oh, I don't know if I'm supposed to be listening to this. I'm a white kid in Canada. I'm 12 years old. We weren't supposed to be listening to this, and now we're all, you know, listening to this. In a different way, hip hop has gone to a place where it's the mainstream now. And, you know, you can look at your resume and go like, yeah, I was part of that. But modestly, did you know that's what you were doing?
Well, we just wanted to be original. We just wanted it to be authentic. We had tried to be New York rappers. That was our influence. You know, we love the Run DMCs and the Rakims and the KRS-One's of the world. And it wasn't working because we wasn't being ourselves. And then once we started to rap about everything we knew about, rap about the neighborhood, not worry about trying to be famous, but just trying to be fresh, trying to be original. And you gotta, you know, if you think back when we was doing it, wasn't too many groups coming out from that angle.
None.
So, yeah. And so we were thinking that, you know, we was just going to do something that was going to make us feel good, make us neighborhood stars. We never knew it would reach a 12-year-old kid in Canada. We had no idea that it even could because it was so underground. And, you know, so we had no idea.
But when you found out it did, when was that? When you found out, oh my God, like when you're traveling across America, and of course there's the Detroit situation, right? And I've always wondered about the Detroit situation. Like in the movie, it's not what I always imagined it to be. When I see it in the movie, is the movie accurate and Straight Outta Compton, the Detroit situation? Because I always thought it was, yeah, there was rioting and it was contentious and there was an issue, but it felt like in the movie, from what I had heard and built up in my head for decades, that the movie didn't do it justice in the seriousness of that moment in Detroit when the fans rioted and the police tried to shut you down.
Well, you know, in a movie, you're trying to shove.
It was so quick.
10 years into 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
So you have to summarize a lot of things. You know, the Detroit situation was a blend of Detroit and Cincinnati, because we had an incident in Cincinnati where, you know, the whole group got snatched up, except me. You know, I got away. I got out the, I got out the side door, and some fans drove me to Kentucky. Like, it's over the bridge. You know, you can see Cincinnati from Kentucky. So they drove me over the bridge. We waited for a minute. No red lights, no blue lights. So they took me to the hotel. But what it was, it's a blend of these two incidents where the police actually put their hands on us. And, you know, we had got threatened all over the country. You know, they threatened us in many different cities. And you know, this time they went for it. And so in the movie, you had to kind of blend these two incidents into one because you only had, you know, one shot at showing, you know, the seriousness of what was going on.
How close were you to not doing the police in concert? Or was it never a question? You knew you were going to do it.
We didn't know we was going to do it. We were fed up with the promoters by the time we got to Detroit. We hadn't sung the song at all on tour because the promoter said they would take us off tour. We were so happy to just be on the road. Mm-hmm. We was like, nah, we're not going to shake this up. We're not going to spoil this opportunity. Until our last show in Detroit, we were just fed up because we had the hottest music in the country. And they were basically trying to treat us like openers. Mm-hmm. And so we decided on stage, yo, let's go for it. You know, I think it was a suggestion, but, you know, it's kind of like, man, we should do this song tonight. And everybody was like, no. But when we got on stage, you know, after we did Straight Outta Compton, it was so electric in the building. Mm-hmm. You know, Dre looked at me and was like, what's up? We going to do it or not? And, you know, then it was like, oh, okay. And then that's when I went into, you know, a little bit of a rant, and then we went into it, and then, you know, all hell broke loose.
So of the writing that you did, and I always maintain, and there are a lot of great hip hop writers that I grew up with in the late 80s and 90s, but of the writing you did for NWA and for Straight Outta Compton, is it Boys in the Hood? Is it Dope Man? Is it Straight Outta Compton? Or is it
the Police that you're most proud of? I would say that the Police is probably the one that got you the most notoriety. But, I mean, Boys in the Hood, it's a classic. But the one you wrote that you look back and go, like, that's a masterpiece.
I think, you know, I think it's three. Boys in the Hood, Dope Man, and, you know, I would say the Police.
Yeah.
You know, those three are, to me, you know, those songs that kind of, you know, locked in, you know, the momentum that we was generating. And I would throw Gangsta in there too.
Yeah.
Because it was a different kind of record. But, you know, those records, I mean, Straight Outta Compton is a, you know, I can't take credit as the writer, you know, the sole writer for that.
Yeah.
You know, that was a, you know, that was a collaboration. And so, you know, out of the ones that I, you know, solely wrote, those four are the powerhouses. Really, those three.
Not including the solo career, though, right? Because the best hip hop line of all time, and a lot of people will use a Tupac or a Biggie or a reference like that, is "Judged by 12 and Carried by 6." Is the best. That's the best goddamn line in all of hip hop, right? And
I would say "Just waking up in the morning and got a."
Wow, that's pretty good.
I feel you. It is a powerful line.
And Chuck's got some great ones too. And you worked with Chuck D. And you were talking about doing like going from L.A. and then not having anything in common with the New York scene, but then you're working with Chuck D when you went solo. And was that a dream? Like, were you like speechless that you were in the company of the great Chuck D?
Without a doubt. We looked up to, you know, Public Enemy and everything that was coming out of Def Jam.
It just wasn't you. Right? Like,
it was me, but it wasn't authentic. You know, it wasn't, you know, every day.
Yeah.
You know, what I was seeing and witnessing and going through. But it was, you know, as a fan, you know, these were my heroes. And to get a chance to see how they work, to learn from them, to work with them, and then be able to inject our West Coast flavor into their East Coast production. Because I had Sir Jinx with me. We brought a lot of music. We brought a lot of ideas to the table as well, you know. So it was just a perfect blend. And it was, you know, it was a dream come true, you know, for a rapper to be in good hands like that.
I remember getting Fear of a Black Planet and seeing Burn Hollywood Burn featuring Big Daddy Kane and Ice Cube. And I was like, I just had to fast forward to the thing, man, and just hear it right away. Because like, this has got to be something, right? And that was a great song. A little too short, right? But it was a great song.
Well, you know, it was supposed to really be just a Big Daddy Kane and Chuck D song. But that's the, you know, that earlier that day, I had ran into Chuck D up at Def Jam because I was trying to get America's Most Wanted produced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking for a producer by the name of Sam Sever, who produced Third Bass album. And so he stood me up. Either he stood me up or Lior never even had him come meet, you know. Mm-hmm. But you know, I leave Lior's office because I wanted to meet this, you know, producer, and here comes Chuck D down the hall. And he's like, "Q, what you doing here?" And so, you know, we get into it, and he said, "Come down to the studio, man. We're doing a record with Big Daddy Kane tonight, and you can let people know you solo on that record." And I'm like, "Man, what time?"
So the driving force behind NWA still had a hard time getting attention when you went solo and trying to get somebody to work with you.
Well, Easy was the man, you know, not Ice Cube.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So nobody looked at it like that. People looked at it like, people probably thought I was making a big mistake. And so, but, you know, I mean, he did meet with me, so he did show me love.
Yeah.
But Sam, I to this day, dude, I've never met Sam Seven.
Yeah. I'm being told I only have 1 minute left, which that's the quickest 9 minutes of my life. I wanted to talk about a bunch of stuff. But I guess given the fact that I'm, you know, in my moment right now, meeting somebody I've always admired and looked up to, when was the moment, because your celebrity star is probably, I would say, bigger than you ever thought it would be. When was the moment where you were like, oh my God, I'm in the same room as this person?
Oh man. Wow. That moment. I guess when I had a chance to meet, you know, Run DMC.
Really?
You know, yeah. Like these are, you know, before, you know, Chuck D and Public Enemy are my heroes, but you know, these are considered rap gods. You know, Run DMC.
So you've been George Clooney, Mark Wahlberg, all these names, and it's when you got to meet Run DMC was the moment. So it's roots. It's hip hop first, and its movies are fun, but hip hop is right. Nice. Nice.
Without a doubt.
I love it. I love you, man. You've changed my life and you've made it. My son and I bond over Ice Cube. He's, you know what? He's 19 and he listens to stuff that I don't like it very much, but whatever, Check Yourself comes on, anything like that. We know every word. We sing it together in the car. So you've made a great bonding moment for me and my son, and this has been great. So
very cool, man. I hope you can bring him to the show.
That's the plan. Show. Yeah. April 30th, the River Cree, you're coming back. Tickets are going really, really well. Just like they did the first time. You can get them at icecube.com. So thank you very much, Cube. It's been a pleasure, and I hope to have this opportunity again. Thank you.
Anytime, man. Take it easy.
Thank you. You too.
Just waking up with the Pepper and Dylan Show. It's the best goddamn thing on the radio. I made sure to feed the dog. Went for a jog. The river valley was looking dope with all the fog. I gotta stop taking pops, scrolling TikTok. Poured myself a coffee and I drank every last drop. I'm running late, so I hit the door. Wonder what's in store for the next 24. But everything's alright. I got some pizza in my lunch left over from last night. It really feels like a day out of my dreams. A co-worker's birthday, so we're all getting ice cream. I checked my bank and I got paid. I DM'd a crush, been trying to smush since the 12th grade. Plus I didn't get pulled over, going 40 over on the hen day. I think it's gonna be a good day.